Welcome, everybody. Glad you're here. Especially wanted to say welcome to Randy and Sally Wiener, who are, Randy especially is a longtime friend and companion in the gospel, and for a season was my coach when the branch was first starting, and Andy and I were trying to figure out how to do this, and his help, his listening ear, was and still remains a gift to me. Those of you who have been on our steward teams know what a gift Randy has been along the way as well. So it's good to see you here, you both here today. Glad to have you. And then I have a coworker here as well. You know, I have another job, and you'll have to find out who they are because I don't want to embarrass them or make them like stand up or anything, but it shouldn't be too tough. Find them and say hello to them this morning. All right. Hey, Luke 15 is where we're going to be this morning as we start a series. I'm going to read just a couple of verses from a story you probably know. We'll get to the story as a whole a little later. But this is Luke 15, verses 17 to 20, and it's not on the screen, so you can just listen along here. When he finally came to his senses, and this he is a critical character in the story that Jesus is telling, when he finally came to his senses, he said to himself, "At home, even the hired servants have food enough to spare, and here I am dying of hunger. I will go home to my father and say, 'Father, I've sinned against both heaven and you, and I'm no longer worthy of being called your son. Please take me on as a hired servant.' So he returned home to his father." I want to make an argument this morning. I want to argue with you, not argue with you. I want to make the argument for the idea that we were made for adventure. I was reminded of this a few months ago when I was able to go backpacking in Seattle with my three blood brothers and my two brothers-in-law. And there we are out in the Olympic National Park, our first night sitting around having dinner together around a little stove. And that trip reawakened within me this idea that we're made for adventure. Now, if you know me at all and you can imagine me going on a trip like this, you would probably expect that I had a very detailed plan heading in. And you would be right. You would be right. We've researched trails, endlessly it seemed like. What trail should we go to? What would the snowpack be like? What was the rainfall average on that trail? What were the fire restrictions? And what permits did you need? And hours upon hours of research and then developing a plan, putting it together, deciding we would head here. And yet as the trip drew closer for me, I realized that I was carrying around a fair amount of anxiety about it. Because as good as you can plan for something like this, there are things you just can't plan for. Like bears. There are actually quite a few bears in Washington, and including in this park. In fact, you had to have your food in certain specific containers, and you had to hang it up every night, and there were all of these blogs you could read about how to protect yourself against bears. And so actually leading up to the trip, I had a few nights where I had dreams about bears, and thankfully I wasn't mauled in any of them. But nonetheless, I was clearly carrying around some anxiety around this trip. And it wasn't just bears, though. What if we got off trail somehow? None of us had ever been here. What if the weather conditions were terrible? What if I didn't pack enough food? Or what if I packed too much and carried all this extra weight I didn't need to carry? What if someone got injured and we were out 10 miles, 15 miles down the trail in the middle of nowhere? I had scenarios in my brain about creating stretchers out of limbs and leaves and calling people back down the trail. I was very worried about this. And then the biggest for me, what if there were lots of bugs? I don't like bugs. It's just honest. I don't. So we had planned, done all of this work to get ready for this trip, and yet there was still uncertainty and risk. But isn't it that way with any adventure? Whether it's moving to a new city or starting a new school or changing careers or exploring parts of your past. Adventures by nature are risky. They contain uncertainty. They can even feel scary. So why did we head all the way across the country to hike into the unknown? Why take the risk? Why deal with the uncertainty? Because we are made for adventure. Adventure that pushes us to our limits. Adventure that offers perspective and helps us see what is true. Adventure that jumpstarts our life, that fills us with vitality, that reignites our souls. You know, it was fascinating. Almost as soon as we were off the trail after 3 days and three nights in Seattle, we were in the car, and I don't know, it was not long, 5-10 minutes, and we were talking about when we could do this again. Even though none of us had showered for far too long, and there were blisters on our feet, and our shoulders ached, we couldn't wait to do it again. Why? Because adventures, while filled with risk and uncertainty, enliven us to our very core. They awaken something in us. And in this series that we're beginning today, we're considering what I would suggest is the greatest adventure in this life. It's the adventure of coming home. So you have been invited to come home. And by home, I'm talking about that place where you both know God and know yourself. Home is the place where you know God. And I'm not talking about just knowing about God. I'm talking about knowing God, experiencing God's love. I'm talking about exploring the endless mystery that God is, the depths and the widths of God that we cannot even hold in our minds, the God whose creative genius and relentless love we only get to the outer edges of. Coming home is the adventure of knowing God, and it's the adventure of knowing yourself. And you may say, hold on, I know myself. I'm 25, 45, 65. I know who I am, and I'm sure that's true to a degree. But every one of us often forgets who we really are. We try to be someone we're actually not. And we cover up and hide and even lock away parts of ourselves. And so we're invited to return home, to be at home with God and with ourselves. And friends, that adventure is risky, and it holds uncertainty, and it is an adventure that pushes us to our limits, but it is precisely, and I would argue only, on that adventure home that we find the life that we were meant to live. This series is rooted in one story. We read a part of it a moment ago, Luke 15, starts in verse 11, goes down to 32. A lot of Bibles will title this the story of the prodigal son. Fine, but I would maybe argue that a better title might be the prodigal sons. It's a story about three people, a father and his two children. And this story is so central to what we're going to be talking about over the next 5 weeks. And I would argue just to the life of a Christian that I'm going to issue you a challenge today. It's a challenge rooted in confidence because I've seen it be able to be done by my son recently. Here's my challenge. My challenge is for you to memorize this story in the next 5 weeks, to work this story deep into your heart. That's about 4 verses a week, 4 to 5. That's doable. And I know this because my son memorized like 32, Matthew 5, more than that. How many? 35, give or take. You didn't count. Yeah, you know, 35 verses. True, there was a little bit of a financial incentive on the line that motivated him to move things along from his grandfather. Yeah, grandfather's played a role, no doubt about it, but it's possible. And I want to suggest that you consider doing that. You could do it together as a family around the dinner table, walk through four verses a night. It's doable. But could this story kind of work its way deep into us over the next month? That's my hope. And it's a story you probably know or have heard, at least. And so I thought instead of me retelling it, let's retell it together. All right? So here's a little time of participation. All right? How does this story start? With whom does it begin? Do you remember? If you're looking at a Bible, that's fine. You can cheat. No one will know. How does it start? Just shout it out. A younger brother. So there are two brothers and the younger one. And right out of the gate, he does something pretty remarkable. What does he do?
He asks for a share of his estate.
Yep. He asks for his share of his inheritance, which is especially odd because his father's still alive. Okay, that's just rude at the very least, right? Okay, so he does this, and then what happens? What's the father's response? He gives it to him.
What?
All right. The father gives him this request, and then what happens? What does the son do? Moves away. Leaves home, parties, yeah, squanders it, someone I think said, what's that?
Spends it all,
yep. Probably has a great time doing it. You know, we don't read a ton about it, but I think we can be honest, probably had a pretty good time. And then what happens to this son? He's broke. He has no choice but to live with the pigs, feeding the pigs, and even the food of the pigs seems appealing to him. That's how desperate things have become. And then the text says that he came to his senses, and he does what?
Goes back.
He conjures up a story that he's going to tell his father to hopefully go back as a
servant.
As a servant. He was a son, but he's given up on that, and now to home he will go begging to be there as a servant, because at least his father's servants have food to eat. He heads home, and what happens then?
His father hugs him.
What else does his father do?
Gives him a ring.
What else?
Throws a party.
Gives him the fattened calf. Yeah, the prized meat. You know, the most luxurious of party items. Yep. So just runs out to meet him on the road, runs to meet him. We'll talk about that next week, how strange that would have been. Son's welcomed in, the party starts, and then we're introduced to the third character, who is? The older brother. And what is he doing? He's mad, he's jealous, he's what? He's sulking. Is he in the party?
No,
he's choosing to stand outside the house, right? Unwilling to go in, and who goes out to him? The father. Yep. Goes out to him and does what? Invites him in. Come home, he says. Even though, of course, this son has never left home physically, he has actually maybe never been home in his heart. So he's invited to come in, and then the story ends. We're not told what happens to the older brother. It's like this cliffhanger that Jesus tells. Very, very well done on his part. And well done on your part. Okay, so you know the story. You know the story. One of the things I think this story teaches us is that coming home involves knowing God and knowing ourselves. This is a story of discovery. I mean, each son is invited to honestly look at and explore themselves, to look deeply inward, to know themselves, and to know their father. And of course, the father in the story represents our God, and they're invited to discover again the character of God, the character of their father. So this is a story about knowing God and knowing ourselves. Both are happening and both are a central part of the adventure of coming home. Now, wise Christian elders have been saying this throughout the millennia. Here's a prayer from Augustine way back at the early part of the church. He prays, "Grant, Lord, that I may know myself, that I may know thee." Isn't that interesting? God, I want to know you. One way to that is knowing myself. About 1,000 years later, John Calvin says, "Nearly the whole of sacred doctrine consists in these two parts, knowledge of God and of ourselves." Sacred doctrine is a fancy way of saying what we believe, what we believe to be true of the world, of ourselves, of God. All of that can kind of get wrapped up in these two things, knowing God and knowing ourselves. And then this one from Merton. About 500 years later, "There is only one problem on which all my existence, my peace, my happiness depend: to discover myself in discovering God. If I find God, I will find myself, and if I find my true self, I will find God." Is that interesting? Knowing God, knowing ourselves. If your upbringing was like mine, you're probably very comfortable with that first one. Yeah, of course, as a Christian, we are to know God, love God, serve God, worship God. Absolutely. This is familiar to us, that being a Christian means knowing God. But that second part, are we as familiar with that? I'm not sure. Are we comfortable with it? I don't know. We may ask ourselves, is it really important to know myself? And what does it even mean to know myself? And how does that interact with it, have anything to do with knowing about God? Over the last 6 months, I've been exploring those questions. And I've been discovering just how connected knowing God and knowing yourself can be. One thing I've been learning about myself recently is just how unkind I can be to myself. This was a truth that was largely lost on me, to be honest. I wasn't really aware of it. But with the help of my therapist and with friends and through some reading that I was doing, it's been one of the things I've been discovering or learning to know about myself, that I'm highly critical of myself, I hold unrealistic expectations, and when I don't meet them, I beat myself up. In fact, I often say to myself when I make a mistake, "You idiot." That's the self-talk that goes on in my head. "You cut that board too short, you idiot." "I can't believe you said that again. You're an idiot." This very self-critical voice lives in me. I'm beginning to know that about myself. And at the same time, I've been discovering something else, that as unkind as I can be to me, God is infinitely kind to me. And of course, I knew this intellectually. Yeah, God is kind. But I've been actually learning it and knowing it, experiencing it. And as I have, the more I know God, the more I know myself, the more I know myself, the more I know God. And so as a result, you know what? I'm learning to call myself an idiot a little bit less, because God doesn't call me an idiot. As I learn about God's kindness, it impacts who I am becoming. And as I discover who I am and hold that in light of how God sees me, it changes me, and it changes my understanding and my love for and my gratitude for God's character. Do you remember that first son in the story, the one who ran away? Listen again to the part where he turns for home. Verse 17, when he finally came to his senses, he said to himself, "At home, even the hired servants have food enough to spare, and here I am dying of hunger. I will go home to my father and say, 'Father, I've sinned against both heaven and you, and I'm no longer worthy of being called your son. Please take me on as a hired servant.' So he returned home to his father." When he finally came to his senses, he returned home to his father. After he did some soul searching, we might say, he returned home to his father. It's interesting, the Greek words here in verse 17, for he came to his senses, it literally translates, he came to himself. He begins to explore himself, to look inward, to face who he is, to see the broken, fractured parts of himself and the parts of himself that perhaps were whole still. But he's looking inward, and isn't it true that the journey home often begins by journeying inward? See, in the first part of this story, the son is only looking outward at the world and what it can offer him, at his inheritance and what that could provide him. It's only after his pride and ego are stripped away and he's with the pigs that there's enough space for him to look inward. And it's in looking inward that he begins the journey home. Any Jars of Clay fans here? Anyone willing to admit this? A couple of, thank you. Three of you, four of you, five, thank you. Okay, thank you. This was one of my favorite bands in college. Their namesake comes from a verse in 2 Corinthians 4. And it says this: "We now have this light shining in our hearts, but we ourselves are like fragile clay jars containing this great treasure. This makes it clear that our great power is from God, not from ourselves." There's this light, Paul is saying, this breaking in of God deep in us, in our heart, the seat of our emotions and our character. There's something happening in us. And in another place, Paul maybe makes it a little more clear. 1 Corinthians 6, he says, "Don't you realize that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit who lives in you and was given to you by God?" Here in 1 Corinthians 6 as well, "My old self has been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me." And then from 1 John, "We know how much God loves us, and we've put our trust in his love. God is love, and all who live in love live in God, and God lives in them." I don't know about you. Maybe you've heard those verses so much that they just kind of go in one ear and out the other, but this is a crazy thing that the scriptures are telling us, that one of the things we discover when we look inwardly is that not only are we there, our broken, imperfect selves, but we also find the very presence of God, which is why this is an adventure. Because God is not just with us, but actually in us. And yes, this adventure has risk, and there's uncertainty in it, and it can feel scary, this idea of heading home. But if we're willing to look inward, we will make discoveries about ourselves and about God's character and love that will begin to usher in life to the full. You see, the journey home begins with the journey inward. You know, I meet many people today who have a faith they would describe to me as tired. I'm struggling to hold on. People who likely grew up in church, have known Christianity maybe their whole lives, but now are considering walking away from the whole thing. Or maybe they're not ready to walk away, but they're desperately wanting to have a faith that is alive, because right now their faith feels stagnant and tired and routine. They long for depth. They're searching for maturity and vitality, but they're not sure how to get it, or even if it's possible. And I would suspect that some of us here today, we've been on this journey for a while, perhaps, and it's been amazing and wonderful, but we've reached this place of wondering, is there something more? Is there another level of depth that God is inviting us to experience in our relationship with Him? And friends, if that's you in any way, may your heart hear God's invitation to come home. Because that invitation, the adventure of coming home, is the exact journey on which spiritual maturity is developed, where depth is found, where vitality is received. It is in knowing God and knowing ourselves that we come home and find life. Any of you parents want to parent with wisdom? It is on this journey of knowing God and knowing yourself that you will discover the tools that you need. Anyone who wants to have a heart with a capacity that's able to walk with other people in compassion and empathy, if that's the kind of person you want to be, it is on this journey of knowing God and knowing yourself that you'll discover and develop that capacity. If you want to be the kind of person who has the ability to discern which way to go and what to do and how to navigate this increasingly complex world, this is the adventure on which you will grow in that ability. If you care about justice and restoration and healing, if you want to be a part of God's redemptive work in the world, it includes the journey inward. See, do you hear this morning God's invitation to come home? It's not an invitation for somebody else only. It's for you. Whether you're a 10-year-old boy or a 65-year-old retiree, the invitation is extended to each of us to come home, to know God, and to know ourselves. And so maybe this morning you're hearing that invitation. Are you ready to take the first step on that adventure? For that first son, the younger son, the journey began with a step, a looking inward and then a step toward home and then another step and then another. Are you ready to take that first step? I don't know what that might be for you. It might simply be open. If you're not ready to take that step, and I think we should be really honest about it this morning, if we're not ready to go home, if we're not quite at a spot where we're able to look inward, could we maybe take the step of voicing what fears and anxieties we have around heeding this invitation? The invitation to come home, it's for each one of us. And so I want to invite you here as we close, if you would, to close your eyes and to open your hands. If this isn't a helpful posture and there's a more helpful posture, then by all means, take that. Closing our eyes helps eliminate some distractions. Opening our hands just, again, puts us in a posture of receptivity. And maybe this morning you're able to say, God, I receive your invitation to come home. And if that is true of you, I'd invite you to speak those words silently right now. God, I receive your invitation to come home. If you're not able to say that today, and again, be honest with yourself, if you're not ready to do that, could you with open hands give to God your fears, your anxieties, your concerns, your reasons for not being ready to come home? Could you name those and lay them down? And with open hands, could each of us receive what we need this morning? Be it courage, be it humility, be it perseverance, be it hope. Would you name right now, silently, would you name what you need? God, we give our lives to you as best we can, as much as we can in this moment. We give ourselves to you and trust that even that act, even that simple step is a profound one because it orients us back towards home. Yes, the journey back to home might be long, and we might have to restart it numerous times, but we want to orient ourselves towards home. And we do that today as best we're able by the help of your Holy Spirit. Amen.